episode number 321.
There's multiple impression effects, right? As the engagement and the comments may not include some of your future customers, but they were seeing them, and that has a second order impression of legitimacy and social proof.
Welcome to the Be Real Show with Travis Too Tall and Hop, where we talk about life, dreams, social media, and business.
Well, hello, and welcome to the Be Real Show with Travis, Too Tall and Huff. Folks, you know your boy is always fired up and ready to bring you some fuego. But after today's show, I think you're going to want to think about how you grow and thinking smart about how you grow and really, at the end of the day, how to ramp up your brand, how to take it to the next level. Because we're bringing you an expert in the game, a gentleman that's written a book, and he's living proof of this, Mr. James Richardson. James! Are you ready to be real?
I am indeed.
Let's go. And just so you guys know a little bit more about James, he's the founder of Premium Growth Solutions. They've been doing strategic growth planning for a lot of early stage, especially consumer package brands, guys. And he's helped over 75 CPG brands with their strategic planning. Obviously, many different challenges, I'm sure, and obstacles. Obviously, at the end of the day, let's just get these things sold and let's get them rebuying and how to obviously get new relationships. But now you've written a book, sir, about ramping your brand and how to ride the killer CPG growth curve. And not only, guys, it's getting a lot of love. It's the number one bestseller in the business consultancy. Sir, pleasure to have you on the show today. How's your day going today first?
It's good, but I don't know I can match your caffeination level. I apologize.
You know what?
I'll do my best.
This is my very first. This is my very first and lovely caffeine. I try to do a apple cider vinegar and lemon water in the morning. And then this is my first cup, man. So I get to enjoy it with you, my man, on our show today. So when you take us back, if you want to rewind, we were talking about you actually are a doctor with the cultural anthropology emphasis. How did you transverse, if you want to call it that, space into getting into helping, you know, consumer growth package brands? I mean, that's very interesting, obviously interesting transition. So where was it? Did you always want to work in that as an early age?
No.
So, yeah, so hey, that's what life's about, baby.
Let's be transparent. Being real. So unfortunately, it's sort of alluded to on my website, I'm a high functioning Asperger's guy.
And got you.
The high functioning came from years of doing drama in high school and college, which saved my ass later. I'm relatively good for an hour faking to be normal, like got I am you. Right now. So, right. I wanted to be an academic all my life. I apologize for those who are offended by that, but that was truly my goal. Wow. That kind of blew up in its face when I was writing my dissertation, which was otherwise enjoyable. And I started to learn about the job market. And I realized that I was sentencing myself to some kind of mental illness.
Right. So
I was like, I have to get out of this somehow. So I actually kind of jumped off a moving train.
Really?
For those of you listening who have done sudden career reinventions,
right,
that felt involuntary.
So it's like, now, whether I like this or not, I'm jumping, baby. Let's go.
I'd spent 15 years dreaming about being a professor at some private school or something. Anyway, so it was hard to let go. Yes. I went into market research, Travis. That's what I did. So it was a good transition because they want market research companies like geeks.
Of course. They're studying a lot of data. You're studying a lot of
You don't need a lot of social skills to go into those organizations.
I remember the tables and the different things you think statistics, a lot of statistics, guys, in market research.
Yeah, I'm glad I actually did it because I actually was from the soft side of social science. So I'm trained in how to interpret symbolism inside social groups. And so, and I'll come back to that because that's really what I actually do a version of that, but it's pivoting around the brand, right? So, and I do it for my clients to help them accelerate and be more cash efficient because I've seen how it actually works. Mm. But anyways, so the career in market research didn't last very long because I got interested in business strategy because I was realizing that executives were consuming our output and making pretty high level business decisions. I got really curious about that. So I moved quickly into consulting.
Got you.
Compared to most people with my background who actually just love just doing research. Like
sticking in the research and sticking in.
Just running interviews and writing up cute little reports. And that got awfully
boring. It was good to learn. But at some point you're like,
I look at it as my postdoc on modern American urban culture. That's what I look at it now because it's way in the past. Right. But that postdoc was great because I had spent my time in India. I spent 10 years studying South Asia. Oh, and wow. So now I need to come back. I had come back home. I'd had my culture shock.
Wow.
Which included a panic attack at a Cub Foods in Madison, Wisconsin. Because I had a cook. I just ate raw. I ate raw, fresh food for 3 years straight. I come back and I have to go grocery shopping for my apartment. And I had a panic attack because I
didn't do it.
The Cub Foods was like a... It's like a strip club of packaged food, basically. You know, it's just it's like colors and boxes and crazy shit. And I literally, the panic attack was like, there's no food here.
Yeah.
The food. I walked in the supermarket, like, where is the food?
Yeah, what's all this
is a warehouse full of cardboard shit.
Boxes of, pings and pings and dings and, low fiber, high fiber, low fat, high, low sugar, bullshit. No,
but this is the beginning of my fascination.
Yeah.
It's from the panic attack, I realized that what was driving me nuts was that I couldn't see the food in the food store.
In the actual store.
I was being assaulted with this intermedium layer of symbolism and what I would call marketing strip show shit, like shake my thing, look at this, look at that. I mean, it's just like, give me the food.
Yeah.
So that was my instinctive reaction coming right back from India.
Wow.
Isn't but that then I realized, I realized, this is bizarre. Look at all, we don't buy, I mean, outside of the produce department.
Right.
But even in there is a hell of a lot of symbolism now. There's organic.
Yeah, of course.
There's Farmer Joe's apples from Hamilton, Wisconsin. So you could buy local organic apples or Mexican organic apples. I mean, there's so much symbolism and we go and buy basic life necessities. Honestly, that's all they are.
Just apples and bananas and just the basic stuff.
That's all it is, right? But it's just drenched in linguistic color symbolism, linguistic symbol, all this stuff. And, you know, unfortunately or fortunately, people who get a PhD in cultural anthropology, we're symbolic analysts, at least when you go to get a PhD in America. So you're,
gotcha.
I like to joke that we're theologians of human behavior because we're a little too abstract for our own good. And so what happened was that I through my colleagues, but also through working for a boutique market research firm, we were able to work with Whole Foods and some leading edge retailers and brands early on in my career. So that got me an interest. So what I was able to do was study how people converted to this weird thing called natural organic foods. And when I say convert, I mean like 80% of their pantry.
Wow. And it's expensive, still, guys. It's big.
It is. And it's still pretty abnormal.
Right. So, it's a big change to make that full change. I mean,
Who better to do this, Travis, than a culture anthropologist? Because anybody, if you've ever met anybody with my crazy degree, you'll know that we're obsessed with deviancy and marginalia, weird shit. And so it was perfect because who is weirder than weird in 2003 than some mother with two kids who buys all her whole food at Whole Foods?
That's Whole Foods. Weird. Right.
It's freaking weird.
Right.
So it begs a lot of the questions like, how did you, because you know that mother grew up eating
regular
for Cocoa Puffs,
yes,
Pop-Tarts, yada, yada, right? So absolutely. Now that mother is now feeding her child like
gluten-free
a diet that costs five times the diet of a Walmart mom.
Or it's thrown away too. That's the thing you also say too. Like a lot of people are buying this shit just to throw it in the garbage. What the F are you doing?
That is the class privilege of like organic produce buying, right? Which is that it rots three times as fast.
Yeah.
So
you got to use it. You got to buy. You got to be shopping like almost daily if you're doing that.
If you're not a vegan athlete,
right,
who needs to have 5 smoothies a day, about a gallon of mixed vegetables, you're not going to burn through your organic produce fast enough. So it was a weird little upper middle class tribe, and it's perfect for an anthropologist to sink their teeth into. So that really got me. And then you combine that with my initial reaction coming back to America, which is,
where's the food?
Why do we have to walk? Yeah, where is the food in the grocery store? And why does my brain, you know, it's really exhausting to shop for food in America, because even though you may not realize it, although some people actually do, after 45 minutes in a Safeway, a lot of people go home and they have a drink. So
really? Especially lately with everyone's social distancing.
Part of it. Yeah, right. Well, I'm talking pre-pandemic.
Right.
One of the reasons people are exhausted or more tired than you think you would be is not like the noise or whatever. It's the fact that your brain actually neurologically is just processed probably 100,000 different signals.
Got you.
And it had to throw out most of them. Yeah. It's walking down a 100-foot aisle, right, which is probably got 2,000 different projects on that one side of every aisle. Right. And your brain has got to figure out,
which stuff do I need?
What's the category I'm shopping in? What are the brands I would even consider?
Right.
And then what are the price points? I mean, it's actually a crap load of neurological work.
Interesting. Compared to
what a rabbit does every day. So
they know what they got to get. They have one thing, baby. Or most things living got one thing they got to go catch for the day.
Most animals. 15 million
different decisions.
most animals don't have to process symbolism to obtain food. That's we
interesting.
Do. And so so we've created this bizarre, over-choice, postmodern shit show.
Right.
Which is why I had the panic attack, because I had come from a world where my cook would come into my Indian home in South India with like literally a little shitty plastic bag of raw food. And then boom, an hour later, there'd be 3 meals. Wow. So, right. There was zero symbolism involved. She just shopped for real food. Anyways, so I became fascinated by this symbolic layer. As an academic, but then as a business consultant, I realized, well, how do we determine how the symbolism works that drives trial?
Right.
And now I'm
test something new.
Now we're getting into the marketing jargon.
Right.
Unleashes trial, which is actually what we would call in my world strong purchase intent from highly attractive consumers. So my book basically it's a niche book. I mean, there's this jargon in the subtitle. That's a bloody giveaway, right? That turns most people off. It's not a Simon Sinek masterpiece, but it's for people who are starting a packaged food brand,
right,
or beverage brand or beauty brand.
Right.
They're going to be selling in retail or online or both. And they got to figure out the symbolism to drive that trial.
And a lot of people doing this, by the way, right now, too.
There are. And I think the challenge is that it's easy for a classically trained marketer to believe that they can sort of divine this.
Got you. Just put the right packaging, put the right price on it, put the right something on it
and they can intuit what it should be.
Got you.
But when you get into CPG, very quickly, if you're new, you start to get overwhelmed. Literally, as you design your package, you're going to start to get overwhelmed because every stakeholder involved in producing the package is going to start asking all these questions, like
dimension sizes, what you're doing.
And suddenly, there's literally, dude, like on a food package, like on a cardboard box of crackers, there's probably 50 different symbols.
Wow. All the different.
The consumer's not reading most of them or noticing most of them, but they actually are noticing a whole bunch.
Wow.
And depending on who your audience is, they're going to focus on this or that.
Right.
So suddenly you start to do a mass market package like Ritz crackers, you're going to wind up with symbolism that triggers nothing. Right. So my clients, what I do is coach people to find an uncommon attribute in their category. So I'll just throw one out there. Keto.
Got you. Yeah, that's a big one right now.
Because it's a big fad right now.
Big fad.
Now, how could you go into a category where keto hasn't entered, or there's not a big keto national brand? and do the keto thing and still play by the cultural rules of that category. So if it's a bar, it actually has to, you know, be sweet.
Follow the stuff, right.
It can't be taste like straw like dust.
Shit, yeah.
You
know,
it needs to be somewhat enjoyable so that you get the... Anyway, so a lot of what I do is get people to think about their competitive situation as an anthropologist would look at it. Mm-hmm. And the anthropologist / business strategist looks at things a little differently because what we're doing is we're trying to figure out the symbolism that will attract the most lucrative cash efficient audience. And those are going to be people who are very price insensitive when they see your thing.
Right.
And they decode the symbolism. They're very price sensitive and they convert very quickly to habitual usage. So habitual is where social science comes in, you know, whether you're a behavioral economist or trained like me, we often consume symbols and aspire to things that we have no actual authentic intention of ever acting on. I'm not going to get into politically incorrect things, right. But on your show, but there's many examples that are politically incorrect pertaining to marriage and sex.
Right.
We aspire to X. We have no intention of actually acting on it because it's just, you know, so there's a lot of, in America, there's a lot of dishonesty between what we aspire to become and what we're actually going to act on. And so one of the reasons I like what I do is that I'm able to exercise a measured dose of my cynicism and sort of help clients figure out, here's the symbolism, given you're offering the competitive situation that you're in, you know, here's the symbolism that's going to make you stand out, make you price insensitive, make you really interesting to people who don't care about money in your category, maybe bring new people to your category. And it's going to cause the right people to become habitual users really fast. And that this is related not just to package design, though. It's related to everything you do. It's actually also related to what channels and stores you sell in.
Right.
You know, because if you've got something particularly nutritionally ahead of the market, and most of my clients, by the way, they're about 5 to 7 years ahead of the market.
Got you. So they're always working on the newest stuff.
To the average Walmart shopper, what they're doing is just cuckamamie, weird ass, give me a break.
It's got to be online or it's got to be at one of these, you know, at the nutrition stores or somewhere like that, right?
Right. So, those are the specialty shopping places to launch and incubate new things. So that's where I'm working in the area I'm in. So I'm trying to get people to understand, look, your thing is weird to most people. What we need to do is figure out that attribute outcome signal. In other words, what's the out? Because people buy benefits, outcomes, whatever you want to call it. That's what they do.
Right. Absolutely.
And depending on the category, there could be a lot of emotion attached to that outcome or none at all. Right? So if it's my toilet paper, then that's zero emotion.
No one cares. If it's keto toilet paper.
But if it's like fancy hummus, you know, that's often a social thing. And there's a performative element to dips at a party, right?
Right.
You know, you're essentially showing off your knowledge of food.
Right.
So it all depends. So you have to figure that out early. The earlier on you figure that out, the better you can figure out your whole marketing playbook. And that includes what a lot of your listeners focus on as professionals, which is optimizing those magnificent Instagram, A/B test,
social media ads, and all the things you can do with digital ads and retargeting.
And so, you know, targeting people by lifestyle, behavioral attributes is obviously very compelling. And if you can get information, here's the thing: if you can get information early on from your fans,
yes,
as to why they buy you, and this is why I wrote the book. I wrote the book not to teach someone to become an egghead like me, God forbid. I read the book to dispense some of the things I've learned through data science work I did at a consulting firm, but also client work about how you can think through the process of learning from your fans what your competitive strategy should be, which will then tell you the key symbolism to have throughout your entire marketing, whatever plan, including the brand identity, right? Like it all has to be tied together.
Right.
And it'll also teach you where you need to launch and how you need to move through the marketplace and appear in society, right? Because retail is just a way of showing up in society.
Right.
It's like...
So a lot of new ways to do things to people. Yeah.
And then now you can do it online in so many different portals. So there's so many different ways to appear. How do you figure that out?
Right.
Well, part of that is understanding early. You're going to just throw shit out there. And I talk about my book. It's like, even though my business is all about strategic planning, the reality is, your plan is going to be a hypothesis in the beginning. It's just going to be a bunch of guesses, and that's fine.
Right.
The minute you can get some information from your fans as to why the people who love you and keep buying you, why they're buying. That's going to unlock the keys to everything.
And it's going to give you the keys to the castle, baby.
What drives me nuts is that people don't, they don't ask, Travis.
That's ridiculous, yeah. Too, because if you have
they don't,
if you have 10 fans on social, you should start asking today. I remember we interviewed a gentleman. He's in a completely different space, but he literally, a really smart guy, Robert Beatles is his name. He has a lot of different successful businesses, a real estate business, and all of a sudden he loves golf. He started asking a certain fan base he created around some golfing videos. He asked them what kind of golf clubs that would they like better, and you know, started asking them questions. Literally, guys, just asking an email list questions. No fancy jargon, just literally like, hey, what kind of golf clubs do you need? What kind of, what could be the
open-ended questions?
Open-ended, right? So he got this dialogue going on, and he literally created a golf company called Bomb Tech Golf, which is like one of the leading new companies in tech drivers and all this stuff, based on asking questions. So you're so right. I mean, I think that's the unleft thing. We've always had the focus group, but now it's much more light and it's easier to access these people, you know?
So here's a story from my original tribe, which is the geeky Whole Foods upper middle class mom.
Right.
And they're still out there.
They are.
And in 20 years ago when I was interviewing them, you know, they were baby boomers, right? And they were, and their kids were young. They were like in elementary school. Now they're out of college. But at that time, and with that generation, I knew that these were women who grew up eating processed food.
Right? Of course,
I mean, tons of it.
We all
absolutely
did.
Yeah, tons like, of it.
There was no.
And so I would go into their. I would go into their pantries, and we go into their pantries because our firm specialized it in something we over marketed and oversold as the pantry tour. Right, like we would actually take the time to not just do an interview, a one-on-one interview, but we would actually do an anthropological tour of all the artifacts related to the interview, because then we could understand what aspirations and ideals and values they're acting on versus bullshit they were telling us.
Ah, and there you gap, go. You got
that
to the
gap
truth.
Is, yeah, the problem is that gap's pretty big in the U.S. because we're a fantasy-driven culture.
Right? We want to be something that we're not.
We're always wanting to be different, and honestly, I think it's half the reason why people are so anxiety-ridden. But
right. Right.
We would ratchet down, maybe. If we'd ratchet down the goals, maybe we could be a little happier. But so yeah, I'd go into these pantries and mom would be eating. What would mom be eating? Mom would be eating crap. But then she would be feeding her kids from Whole Foods.
Wow.
Or she would have converted to Whole Foods with her children. Crap. And the husband, was eating Lay's potato chip Pop-Tarts and didn't give a shit.
Right.
And they would describe this sort of, oh my God, I have to shop. I have to shop twice each week.
Ridiculous.
I have to shop. I have to go to Safeway for my husband. And then I have to go to Whole Foods for my kids. And they just said, this is the reality we're in because I've got to protect my children. I have to, all these beliefs around purity and cleanliness and protection. And I was like, wow, John Mackey really is printing money here. Because he's got these women in a state of total panic.
Now Jeff Bezos, goddamn it.
I was like, it's no easier way to make money than, unfortunately, in capitalist consumer society, than to terrify a mob.
Right.
I mean, that's how you create a price-insensitive consumer.
There's chemicals on your carrots. And there's
there you go.
Next thing you know, arsenic in your apples and this and that.
And the one thing about those fears is, you know, we could debate how real or unreal they are. But anyways,
sure, I'm sure there's got to be something.
We don't want to do that. We don't want to do that. But the point is, when you have that kind of fear, Travis, you never suddenly decide I was wrong. This is just a social science thing I've noticed. Because you kind of overcommitted socially to an extreme position. And we're dealing with this with conspiracy theories. It's very hard to get people out of that because they've
got you.
Because, I mean, some people do deconvert, but honestly, as long as there's enough social reinforcement, you'll just keep sitting there.
Just keep thinking for the next one. Oh, it's going to happen tomorrow. It's going to happen June 3rd. So, it's going to be it's October 14th that Trump's coming back and taking over, guys.
So here's a more mainstream version of that, which is people who make a big dietary overhaul for their, to lose weight.
Yes.
I mean, and they actually really do it. They don't just sort of talk about it.
Right.
So they actually go and do this, and then there's an effect. If there's actually an effect and the people that they live with are supportive of it, because that's a huge if.
Right.
Because often they're not. But if they are, and like if the couple's doing it together, which is much more effective when you study it, After about 6 months of persisting in it, it generally, a lot of that will stick. And what will, even if they gain a little weight back, what will happen is the brand, some of the brands will have permanently traded up to healthier things, quote unquote. And people don't really, even if they lose their job, Travis, they actually don't, they don't like go back to Walmart because their income went down. It's amazing.
Wow.
They really
that
don't.
Loyal. They create that much
because they've convinced, it's an ideological thing. It's like, no, yeah. I saw benefit from adopting those values, and those are the brands, those are the little magic tools that made help me
do. I get through my day and
this is what it is, and I'm just going to make it happen, and I'll sacrifice something else like vacation to save money.
Wow, that is fascinating, dude. That is absolutely fascinating. Oh man, we're about to we're about to take you into our top 10 though right now, and then we're going to keep going. We're going to keep the convo going because we got to get the top 10 in here. Are you ready, my man? Are you ready? I got a whole page of notes, guys. I always take notes. You know, your boy's always taking notes here. So watch out. The professor is at the helm here. Are you ready?
I am.
Let's go. Apple or Android?
Apple.
Apple. Netflix or YouTube?
I'm Netflix.
Netflix. Instagram or Facebook?
Facebook.
Facebook. The OG. Chicken or steak? Chicken, laptop or a smartphone? You gotta pick. Or neither.
Oh, I missed the last one.
Sorry. Oh, a laptop or a smartphone?
I'm laptop.
Laptop, Spotify or Pandora?
Oh, Spotify, yeah.
Spotify, movies or video games?
Movies.
Movies, reading books or listening to books?
I'm a reader.
Reader, baby. Get that physical book. Stocks or real estate if you're thinking about another type of investment?
Oh, stocks.
Stocks, yeah. Baby. Get that liquid. And oceans or lakes if you're thinking about getting on a vacation?
Ocean.
What ocean would you want to go right now if you could just hop on a plane and we're out?
Oh, my God.
We're out today.
The Indian Ocean.
The Indian Ocean. Go back to the old school roots, baby. Let's go. I love that. And James, when you're waking up and getting ready for your day and you're getting going, you're getting your day motivated, why do you love being you?
Oh, man. Because I am able to get up and help entrepreneurs through various medium channels. So
it's cool to be able to do it at scale too with technology, right? Like, isn't that a blessing too? Like, you're in Tucson, you probably have entrepreneurs helping out all over and be able to help them at scale and not run down your body just sitting on planes all day to have a quick 30-minute meeting. You know, it's like, oh, God, thank God we have technology. for some of that stuff, it's really nice, you know, to be able to have, you know, somewhat of a same kind of meeting and outcome without wearing down your body, man. You know, and anyone that wants to resist that, you know, you have to see how efficient it can be. Do you think you'll ever retire from the game of consulting and helping brands and helping entrepreneurs?
Probably. If I do, it's because I will have figured out the trick of just writing books and living off the royalty income.
Yeah.
I'm working on it.
Yeah, you are. That's why you're on the Be Real Show, baby. Of course. And do you have a routine to start your day? Do you do something either like repetitively or do you have just a routine to get your day going?
I would say my routine is that I post on LinkedIn.
Oh, nice. Every day?
Unfortunately, at 7 a.m. Arizona time.
Nice.
7 days a week.
Good for you.
That's like, it's sort of like prayer.
What do you usually post at that time?
So I've got a process. I do 3 blog posts on Monday, Wednesday, Friday. The other days I try to pull in popular or industry topics.
Topics.
And I'm going for virality on those other days. Just what can I say that's not will get me sued, but
generate attention. I love that. So what stuff's on the edge of, virality? I love that. So you're doing your own content and you're making that. Hey, it's so important, guys. Remember this. 7 days a week is what he said, that's what you get success. And anything you do is you just keep putting in the work. You keep putting in the reps in life. That's the beauty of it. And that's the hard part too, that a lot of people don't want to realize. So,
dude, I posted 9 months straight every day on LinkedIn before I generated any meaningful engagement. 7 days a week for 9 months to a wall of deafening silence. And then
it feels that way sometimes. It does.
Once I hit about 2,000 connections, suddenly I actually had one post that went off the charts, and then boom.
Next thing you know. And that's what it is. It's just never giving up on yourself, and knowing also that a big part of social is the impression and less the engagement. So there's so many people viewing your content, but they may never actually ever comment or like or engage it. Like a lot of my customers never comment on my posts, never engage with me, but they're my customers. They pay us. So that's the interesting thing about social too, that people always have forgot that a big part of it is just putting out the impression. And like you said, putting out content. And then at some point it hits a piece where it just gets boom.
There's multiple impression effects, right? As the engagement and the comments may not include some of your future customers, but they were seeing them, and that has a second order impression of legitimacy and social proof.
Like, right. Like he's talking about something. He's doing something, right? Someone's listening, same with the B-Real Show when I started, you know, 8 years ago. You're wondering, who the hell is going to listen to this thing? And I never thought that I'd be able to bring on the kind of entrepreneurs and a variety of entrepreneurs that I've got to come on the show. Because when I started, James, it was only talking about social, because I have a social agency and we talked about a lot of different thought leaders. And then if you listen to past episode 50, then it just evolved into entrepreneurs in every single different category. I've never almost had any category. Last Friday, we had a gentleman that they write handwritten letters, handwritten. They're out there in Arizona with robots. And just new people all the time, just new entrepreneurs. Is there a skill right now that you're trying to master or get better at?
Public speaking. Yeah.
Nice. Well, you're doing good, dude. For what you you know, were upfront with me in the beginning. And anyone that challenges himself with public speaking, I can say the biggest thing I've ever overcome with it is just to keep working at it. You know, and that's just like what you're doing with the books, coming on shows, putting yourself out there. That's how you get better. And so commend to you, my brother, for doing it and being a man that's not just preaching, but you're practicing what you preach, my man. Is there an app or like a tool or something that you use in your day that you like find it helpful to you to get you either through your business or help you with your entrepreneurs?
Well, I'll mention there are a couple, but the one that might interest the folks listening, because my business is I have an 80-20 business model, 20% client time, 80% content marketing.
Got you.
Literally.
Got you.
I produce a bizarrely large amount of content for a solopreneur.
Right.
And so I use, and a lot of it's written. So I use Grammarly.
Ah, I love that one.
Religiously. In fact, my virtual assistant, I got her using it now to save me even more time. So I love that app. I mean, it has some limitations, but not nearly as many as like the built-in stuff in Word, Microsoft Word, which is horrible.
It understands grammar, guys. It understands if you're putting the right pronunciations and the right words and the right R, you know, all these different things that we happen to just type real quick, but then it finds, hey, you put that wrong way, and then it gives you a good suggestion. And the cool thing about Grammarly is it does it on the Word and also on the internet too, right?
Yeah. Oh, the weird thing about Grammarly was that it's one of those weird apps that it's rare, because I'm super hypercritical, Travis, about
apps.
A lot of things, but definitely internet websites and all sorts of crap. And I'm always disappointed, usually. But this freaking thing blew me away, because it was popping up. The little Grammarly circle was popping up in like every form field I ever touched.
Right.
They'd already figured out how to just appear seamlessly without causing a massive website crash.
Right. Right. So true. Yeah.
Which is fantastic.
App. It's a functional app, guys. If you could sit down to a chicken dinner, my man, with anyone in the world, who do you want to sit down with? They're coming to you. In Tucson, Arizona. Beautiful Tucson.
See, I'm so old, a couple of them are dead.
That's okay. We've had dead guests.
I'll have your chicken for you.
I'll eat your chicken for you.
You know, I would probably want to sit down with... Oh, God, this is tough. Oh, definitely President Obama.
Obama, baby. I love Obama.
I want to pick his brain.
Love that dude. Love that dude. The OG president for real. And he seems like he's enjoying his life right now in the post-presidency. A lot better.
He looks younger now.
He looks younger. Yeah, he got his youth back. You know what I mean? He got his youth back, baby. Meditation. You know what I mean? Well, I really appreciate you, brother, and what you are doing for those CPG brands. And anyone that's listening that's thinking about starting a brand, do not, you know, just go do this on your own. Bring in someone like my man James that can help you in the beginning, especially because before you take those big costs, like you see on Shark Tank and some of these things where you got to redo everything. You're way better up front doing this up front. And I think that with an expert like James, he's already working with 75 brands, guys. And first, the way you get started is just read his book, guys. Go check him out, Ramping Your Brand. We're going to put it .com. We'll definitely put that in the show notes too for you, my man, so that we have it easily get accessible for you guys to just hit the show notes, quickly click that link. Go buy the book. I'm going to definitely take a look at the book as well, my man. I love that. Even though I'm not even in CPG brands, I still like looking at books, and I maybe even like to get an autographed book because I love collecting autographs. And that would be a limited edition, guys. So, you know, your boy's ready. So we're going to put rampingyourbrand.com, guys. And then your favorite also place you said to hang out is also on LinkedIn, correct?
Yeah, I'm all over the place. It's my pipe.
Let's go, baby. James Richardson, if you guys check him out, he's everywhere, especially on LinkedIn, which is a great place and content. But folks, you've been hanging out with Dr. James Richardson and Travis Too Tall and Huff. We want to thank you again for your time today, and let's keep being real. What another epic episode. And if you enjoyed the episode today, can you please do me a favor and subscribe to our podcast, The Be Real Show, on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform? And also take a little time today, if you don't mind, and give your boy T Huff a review. I would really super appreciate it. And thank you so much for listening today. We're all going through a lot right now. And Real Time Outsource, my business, is giving back to local and small businesses. Through our social media services and campaigns, we are actually helping small businesses get more exposure during these times, and also when we get through these times. At the end of the day, we don't know how long this is all going to last, but most importantly, you got to think about your business right now and take it seriously. So come check us out at realtimeoutsource.com, realtimeoutsource.com, and we would love for you to qualify and get the process started where we can take a look at your business and see if we can qualify you for some of our services. Little to no cost for most of the businesses, and some businesses, you know, you're gonna have to pay, but that's part of life, right? But most importantly is that I think this is the time, folks, that you can actually help thrive in your business. And so I would love to help you personally with our team. We're all going through a tough time right now, so take advantage of us. realtimeoutsource.com. Check us out, and we would love to do some business with you and help you with your social and digital media in 2020 and beyond.